According to the Project on Student Debt, the average graduate of a four-year college in Ohio leaves school with nearly $24,000 in debt. Who is issuing those loans will change for some students, and other students may have to borrow less money because of increases in government grants. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. New federal law signed by President Obama makes changes to the federal student loan program. Starting this summer, all student loans will come directly from the federal government. No more private banks acting as middlemen. And by eliminating the middleman, President Obama claims the government will save $68 billion in fees over the next 11 years. The government will take that savings, it says, and use it to increase direct student aid awarded through its Pell Grant program. The law does some other things. It also reduces the payments cap to 10% of income, down from 15%. And if students, former students, make their payments, the loans are forgiven after 20 years, not the current 25 years under the system as it stands right now. The law also contains additional money for community colleges and schools that cater to minority populations. We'll try to figure this all out and translated into basic English over the next hour or so, and to help us understand the new law and determine if it will help students, we turn to David Boehm. He is the Vice President for Government Relations and Research with the American Association of Community Colleges. David, welcome to All Sides on WOSU.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
David, if I'm a student entering college next fall, or if I'm a parent of a soon-to-be college freshman, what does this new law mean to me?
Well, on one level, it doesn't mean a tremendous amount to you because the same student financial aid programs that you would have benefited by and accessed in the current student award year will be the same this coming fall. The primary difference, as you mentioned in your introduction to the program, is that the funding, the financing for student loans, which students rely on so heavily in this country to pay for their college, will be provided directly by the federal government rather than using banks and other private entities to provide the loan capital for the students. But in terms of the actual terms and conditions of the loans that students receive, none of that will be changed. Let me also add, though, as you also mentioned in your introduction, that the change in this in the provider of the capital for the student loans does mean that needy students over the coming years are going to be able to receive more money through the Pell Grant program.
So students won't see a change in their interest rates, the ones who take out student loans, government-backed student loans.
The interest rates themselves, no, have not been changed through this legislation, but a maximum amount that a student will be required to repay once they've completed their education and begun retiring their student debts will be changed through this bill.
So basically after a person has left school, graduated hopefully,
mm-hmm.
they look at the income. How does that formula work? They look at income and then living expenses?
No. What the government looks at the amount of your income that would be covered or limits the amount of your monthly income that you have to use to retire your student debt and caps that at 10%.
Mm-hmm. So basically 10% of your paycheck,
mm-hmm.
no more than that,
mm-hmm.
Will be used to pay your student loans. And also, if you're good with your payments and you make your payments, it's forgiven after 20 years. The rest of the balance is forgiven.
Yeah, hopefully you've paid it off by then, but yes, that's true.
Now it's 25, so.
Mm-hmm, correct.
Well, added incentive to make your payments. If you have questions about this new system or just questions in general about student loans and financial aid for college, give us a call at 292-8513, or you can email your questions and comments to allsides@wosu.org. Pell Grants. Who qualifies for Pell Grants?
Well, it's students who generally fall in the lower middle class or even down further than that in the income spectrum. Most of the Pell funds, it's a little bit over 80% of all the Pell funds are awarded to individuals and families with incomes of $30,000 a year or less. So from our point of view, it's an efficiently targeted program on providing grant money to students who simply wouldn't be able to attend college without that assistance from the government.
And the additional money the government promises that comes from what they say will be savings from the fees, will it raise that level up a bit as far as the qualification goes? Will it give more to the neediest students? How will the increase in funds be used?
Yeah, without getting too complicated, there were two streams of money provided through this legislation. One just provides some basic funding to shore up the program because as the economy has worsened and the importance of attending college has become the awareness of it more pronounced in the country, more students are attending college, and that has driven the cost of this program up. So some of the money in this bill was used just to shore up the program. But more importantly, from the student perspective, the bill guarantees that the Pell Grant maximum will increase by the Consumer Price Index for 5 years starting 2 years from this coming July, so that the value of the grant will be going up. And without going into the complicated student aid formulas, as that grant goes up, slightly more affluent students and families qualify.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking about the complicated student loan program and student financial aid program with some changes, which likely means good news for students, some students anyway, starting this July and over the next couple of years. You mentioned the cost of living increases. It's pegged to the Consumer Price Index, the rate of inflation. College tuition tends to increase greater than that, or by margins greater than that. Is that going to be enough?
Well, there's no doubt that financing college is a stretch for many, many families. It's a stretch, across the country. One of the great things about the American system of higher education is that we have an array of institutions priced very differently, depending on the interests and inclination of an individual. Community colleges, our average tuitions nationally were $2,544 this fall. Four-year public tuitions a little bit over $7,000. The government provides different sources of student financial assistance depending on the cost of the institution that you're attending. Fortunately, most students attending community colleges don't need to take out those loans that we've been talking about, whereas if you want to attend an institution that has a higher tuition, then you probably are going to need to borrow some funds in order to finance your education. So the reality is that debt financing is what the majority of American students now need to do to get through college.
We're speaking to David Boehm. He's the Vice President for Government Relations with the American Association of Community Colleges. We're speaking about changes in the student loan program enacted into law. Part of it is part of the health care bill passed by Congress and signed by the president. David, can the federal government do this? I know this is not completely foreign because about half of the student loans now are direct government loans. So how big of a stretch is it going to be for the federal government to take over what was being done by the banks?
Yeah, that's a good question. But, frankly, the Department of Education and the Obama administration, which proposed this change, have such an overriding interest in ensuring that implementation of this change is done effectively and without snafus, and certainly without students experiencing any kind of delays in receiving their loan funds, that we believe when we are told by the department that they will be able to administer this new the number of institutions entering the direct loans program, we take them at their word for that. And we have heard from our campuses who've made the switch from the bank-based FFEL program into this direct loans program that generally has gone fairly smoothly for them, and that in most cases, in fact, it's involved less administrative burden and complication than they anticipated.
One of the concerns I've read about is that do colleges become debt collectors here?
Absolutely not. The debt collecting is being done by third parties as it is currently under the direct loans program. And, in fact, many of the largest lenders have already secured contracts to do the servicing and collection of the loans for the federal government. So all the colleges will really be doing that they weren't before if they were in this program is issuing the promissory note to the student and passing it on to the government.
Part of the new law gives more money to community colleges, $2 billion. That's a good move, I take it, from your perspective as someone who speaks for community colleges.
Well, it is a good move from our perspective, but we like to think about this more broadly in terms of the role that community colleges play in economic development regionally and nationally. The money is focused money. It's a competitive grant program for 4 years. It will enable institutions to apply to the Department of Labor to receive funding for job training programs that are designed for people who want to get additional skills in order to obtain a new job. It's a very specific program in terms of what these funds are to be used for, and it's for, again, individuals who found themselves to be out of work.
292-8513, if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking about changes in the student loan program and college financing and the whole issue of growing debt on the part of college graduates and folks who leave college and into the workforce. 292-8513, if you'd like to speak about this issue, or you can send an email at allsides@wosu.org. Some of these changes, David, are ways off. The increase in Pell Grants, they're hoping by 2020, or 2017, the increase by about $400 is the target date. What's your worry that, you know, obviously, you know, President Obama, if he is reelected, would be, you know, he'd be out of office by 2017, even if he was reelected. The government has cut the Pell Grants in the past. Are we really going to see this increase?
Well, the increases that one of the beauties of the increases that were included in the law that the president signed last Tuesday, and I'd note that he signed it at one of the community college, Northern Virginia Community College in suburban Washington. But one of the beauties of the legislation is that it actually guarantees these increases of the consumer price index that I described previously. Another thing that's important for people to understand is that in a world of, as we've all heard, polarized politics and, you know, a lot of anger and a lot of you said this, no, I didn't say this, politics, that the Pell Grant program and student financial assistance programs in general have very strong bipartisan support. Both Republicans and Democrats support them. Administrations, Republican and Democrat alike, have been strong backers of this program. I think there's something very basic that appeals to both the population and the legislators about helping people who aspire to a higher education but who can't afford it, for the government to give them the means to do that, with the idea that if they work hard, that ultimately it'll benefit the government by returning in the form of tax revenues, you know, better jobs, higher wages. And so it's sort of a win-win kind of thing. So we've been blessed by the fact, frankly, as an advocate, that the Pell Grant program does have the broad-based support that it does.
Okay. Thanks very much, David Boehm. He's the Vice President for Government Relations with the American Association of Community Colleges. Thanks very much for joining us here on All Sides on WOSU.
Thank you, Larry.
I appreciate it. When we return, we'll speak with two folks who work in financial aid at two local colleges, Columbus State and Ohio State. We'll get the local reacts to this when All Sides continues on WOSU.
The president tosses way high and outside. Bondage Gate spanks a top RNC staffer, and Donald Trump gives Rod Blagojevich the axe.
Governor, you're fired.
I'm Neil Conan, pitches primaries and possible Supreme Court picks. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us. Plus, proper nouns in Scrabble, is nothing sacred? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon. It starts at 2 o'clock right here on WOSU 820, NPR News. 71 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. Some sunshine today. There is a chance of afternoon rain and a high of 83. Cloudy tonight with rain showers and thunderstorms likely tonight, a low of 55.
Support for WOSU comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts, presenting the Acrobats and Contortionists in Cirque Mechanics' Birdhouse Factory, April 9th at 7:30 at the McCoy Center for the Arts in New Albany. More at mccoycenterforthearts.com.
All Sides continues on WOSU 820, NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann Fisher today. We're speaking about changes in the student loan program, changes in the federal Pell Grant program. Good changes if you're a student who qualifies for the Pell Grants. More money is coming your way. Student loan changes, most students likely won't see much of a change. They'll still have to repay the loan, just be to a different organizations. Joining us now is Tally Hart. She's the Senior Advisor for Economic Access at Ohio State University. Wow. Tally, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning.
Also, Marty Malowski. He is the Dean of Enrollment Services with Columbus State Community College. Marty, welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
Tally, let's start with you. How many students at Ohio State use this loan program? Even a ballpark number?
It's more than half of our students at Ohio State who use the student loan program. And in our graduate and professional programs, it comes closer to 90%. So a big impact on Ohio State, although we've been direct lending the new program for everyone for a number of years.
So this won't really affect students a whole lot then?
Who it will affect, as David pointed out in your first segment, are students from Ohio State after they graduate mm-hmm. and begin to repay their loans. I'm especially excited about the impact of a 10% ceiling on income. That is really going to encourage a lot of students who may have significant debt to go into community service work and potentially lower paying jobs that they are passionate about and not feel that they have to go into professional avenues simply to repay their student loans.
And the new law makes it so that this forgiving period is 20 years if you make your payments faithfully. But if you go into teaching or military service, it gets cut to, what, 10 years, correct?
That's right. And especially if you teach in an urban area, the technical description is a Title I school, then you can have other reductions in your student loans. And so it really continues that trend of the federal government saying, we really want to support people who help our nation by devoting themselves to people who also need assistance in the way of better teachers, people who are engaged in community service. Our law students, for example, will really benefit from this change in the law.
Tally, it's from the back end at Ohio State. Will any of your administration of these student loans change?
For the financial aid office at Ohio State, no. Because we've been direct lending for a significant period of time, it won't change anything that our students see. Students across the country have already seen this year a simplification in the financial aid basic application. That dreaded FAFSA mm-hmm. has become a lot simpler for everyone, and so the improvements to date have already benefited our students.
Marty Malowski from Columbus State Community College. How does this affect Columbus State students?
Well, unlike Ohio State, Columbus State is just now embarking on the direct loan program. Mm-hmm. We had an inkling that this was coming, so we had a pilot this spring quarter and have begun the transition for our students with a limited number of new borrowers who came to us in the spring. And we're doing that to make certain that we have an opportunity to see how the program works before having all of our students who are borrowing loans have to go through the new process, because that will begin for all of our students beginning in the summer quarter.
What percentage of Columbus State students have to take out student loans?
We've seen the percentage increase over the last several years. Presently, it's around 50 to 60% take out some level of student loans.
So even though the tuition is considerably less than Ohio State or some of the other schools around here?
That's right, and that's been a big change we've seen recently. Although the tuition has remained stable at Columbus State, we have not experienced a tuition increase since 2006. Other costs in the economy and things have combined to essentially force some of the students to maintain their living expenses, their transportation costs and the like through the use of student loans.
292-8513, 292-8513 if you'd like to join our discussion, or you can send an email at allsides@wosu.org. We're speaking about changes in the student loan program and the issue of student debt. Pell Grants, more money coming for Pell Grants. Is it enough money?
I'd say Marty would probably agree that there's never enough money. Mm. What I am especially encouraged is we deal in my area with economic access is the stability that this law provides in the Pell Grant program. It really does assure families, especially those least inclined to go into higher education, that the Pell Grant program will be there. it will increase. It's the first time there's been that kind of assurance. And while we'd like it to be a larger increase, nonetheless, it's there. It really does help the program in terms of long-term planning. We think that students need to learn about college in about fourth or fifth grade. So as my students go out to talk to young children about it, we can be a lot more assured that Pell Grants are going to be part of their futures, and that means college can be part of their futures.
Marty, your thoughts?
We have a little different perspective at a community college because of the difference in the tuition rate. And what's nice as it relates to community college access is that as a Pell Grant increases, it can cover more than just direct tuition and fees to the school. And so the buying power of a Pell Grant as it goes up has a really exponential buying power to community college because it affords a student the opportunity to not only subsidize the cost of their tuition and fees, but also books, supplies, some of those non-direct educational costs such as transportation, living expenses, child care that are also important to take into account when you're looking at the cost of attending college.
Should the income qualifications be adjusted? I mean, the complaint you hear from mainly middle-class parents and middle-class families is that you have to be really low income to qualify for a grant, or you have to have a lot of money to pay for a college, especially a private school. Is it too low, the qualification standard for a Pell Grant in your estimations? Or is it about right?
I would say yes. It's just as far as the federal government can stretch its dollars currently. There's no question that where families fall out of eligibility for Pell Grants in terms of their income, I think most of us would say is too low, that it really should be stretched farther. The question is, how much does the federal government allocate? One of the exciting parts about this bill and a change from the overall context, and David mentioned part of this, is it's the first time that savings in one program, in this case student loans, have been directed immediately back to other student aid. In prior venues, when there were savings, they just went into the federal government in general. And so, again, a very, very healthy trend that I hope in the future will increase the income level at which families receive Pell Grants.
292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Eric. He says he's a fairly recent college graduate with both federal and private loans. Does the new law, such as only paying 10% of his income towards loan repayment, apply to his loan, or is it just new ones to be written after July 1st?
It will apply to his loan when it goes into effect. I want to be clear, though, it will apply to his federal loans, not to his private loans, unfortunately. Those are still bank secured, and they're very good loans in terms of helping students go through college, but they are not governed by this law. But Eric will benefit from the new law in terms of his current federal loans.
So how far out does it go? If you graduated from college 5 years ago, do you benefit from this income cap as well?
It's going to apply to everybody.
Oh, it
who's
does.
As soon as the legislation goes into effect.
Okay, so current students who have already taken out loans,
no matter who,
that's good news for them, especially in this tough economy, because that's what I think you're seeing is students graduate from college and just can't get a good paying job because there aren't any jobs out there. This has to be a big benefit for them.
It is. I do want to point out, though, that there are already provisions in place that former students should exercise. If they're having trouble getting a job, when they demonstrate that for either the FFELP program or the current direct loan program, there are mechanisms in place to help them in that transition. It's called forbearance is the technical term, but there are provisions to help them until they do secure a job. And they should actively pursue those now, not just wait for this new law to be in place.
Marty Malowski from Columbus State, do you have any idea how much of that $2 billion that is included for community colleges will come to Columbus State?
At this point, we don't. We are actively looking at the opportunities that are afforded us in this legislation. The funding is going to be competitive, and there are going to be ways that institutions go about seeking that funding. And we are certainly pleased that the legislation acknowledges the value of the community colleges in economic development, and we're doing everything we can to make sure we're positioned to bring some of that money to Columbus and Central Ohio.
Do the schools apply in Ohio? Do the schools apply individually, or is it part of the state system for this money?
At this point, it appears that institutions individually will be looking at ways that they can benefit their communities, and so it would in that case be an individual application.
So how will this money be used? We mentioned job training earlier and things like that.
Much of what the community colleges do is based in career and technical job training and degree programs. And specifically what we'd be looking to do is to find good matches with areas where employability looks promising over the near-term future, areas of growth, areas of demand, and looking at how we can fill that gap as the educational provider and get more individuals who need those employment opportunities the education they need to secure those jobs.
So give me an example. How might this – would it be developing a new course for a new emerging industry? How specifically, how might it look?
It could look a number of different ways. It could be an entirely new program that may not be offered. If we see it, there's an emerging technology area and employers in the area or employers looking to relocate may need a trained workforce, we may look to develop a new program area. Likewise, though, it may be infusing different streams in our current curriculum. There's a green movement certainly everybody is aware of, and we're already embarking on ways to look at greening our curriculum and our construction trades or engineering programs to make sure that students already are getting a sense of some of the initiatives that are going to be in demand in the job force.
There's some concern. I think some of the banks argued that interest rates on these student loans are going to rise because of this government takeover, as they call it, of the student loan program, the ones that were administered by the banks. Your thoughts on that, fears about that?
I personally don't share that concern. The bank loan rates are adjusted by a stated formula once a year. And as David pointed out earlier, these programs have enjoyed such bipartisan support, and they're so important to the constituents that the Congress serves that I can't imagine sort of runaway interest rates being endorsed. It also doesn't make good economic sense. As we've pointed out, these students are going to be back in the workforce, and so there's a negative pull on the Congress that would cause interest rates to remain lower so that those students take those dollars, earn their income, and are part of our growth in economy.
I agree with that. I was going to add that even before this recent legislation, although interest rates do fluctuate because it's an annual assessment, from the time I entered the profession in the mid-'80s, it's actually been a trend over that longer term of declining interest rates. So this is something that is not new, that there has been bipartisan support, and I would also expect to see that continue.
What is the average interest rate right now on a federally backed or federal student loan?
Depending on the type of loan, mm-hmm. it ranges from a little above 5% to a little below 7%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very good loan in terms of – not that loans are what we prefer, but it still is a very viable mechanism. One of the points of student loan history that I find very interesting and is forgotten in the current dialogue is that direct lending was actually first proposed during the first Bush administration, Bush 1. And so that's just an example of the way in which bipartisan support has occurred over the history of student loans and financial aid.
Well, students who take out these loans really will not see a huge difference in their – I don't know if they even have coupon books anymore. That's what I had when I graduated. They won't see a whole lot of difference.
I think at the student level, that's a fair statement. One aspect that I think I would like to point out, and I'm very hopeful to see play out, is that with the increased emphasis on showing that there's a tangible level of support from the federal government in increasing Pell Grant funding as part of this legislation, it really should, combined with the economic drivers that are forcing individuals to consider going back to school, break down some of those barriers about, I may not be able to make this a reality for myself. And I think that one of the things that will happen is, yes, that's very true. On the student level, it's not going to change the dynamics of being a student loan borrower. But I think on the whole, I would be hopeful to see it really make it a more possible avenue for students to consider getting into higher education in general.
We're speaking about changes in the federal student loan program and student debt and student college financing in general. If you'd like to join our conversation, call 292-8513. We're speaking with Marty Malowski. He's the Dean of Enrollment Services at Columbus State Community College, and we're talking with Tally Hart. She's the Senior Advisor for Economic Access at Ohio State University. We will take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we'll broaden the discussion a little bit into the whole issue of student debt, how much debt should students carry, and things like that when All Sides continues on WOSU.
Support WOSU by bidding on unique culinary-themed packages online now. With the Chefs in the City Baker's Dozen, you can bid on 13 of the most sought-after Chefs in the City silent auction packages, even if you don't have a ticket to the event. Go to WOSU.org/chefs to view all 13 items up for bid. These great items will sell on the evening of April 15th. Proceeds from this and all of Chefs in the City 2010 events will directly support children's educational programming on WOSU TV.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. In just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here, and we'll hear about the future of journalism and news organizations in the United States with Ohio State University John Glenn School of Public Affairs Kiplinger Program Fellows. That begins in just about 20 minutes at 11 right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
Some sunshine today, and there is a chance of afternoon showers, a high of 83 degrees. Cloudy tonight, and rain showers and thunderstorms are likely tonight, especially after midnight, a low of 55. For Thursday, mostly cloudy with morning rain and then steady temperatures for Thursday of around 55 degrees. Partly sunny for Friday and a high of 51. All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides on WOSU. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann Fisher today. We're speaking about the student loan program, the whole issue of student debt. Do students leave school with too much debt? Are there other ways to pay for college, either government-backed or privately-backed? We're speaking with Martin Malowski. He is the Dean of Enrollment Services at Columbus State Community College, and Tally Hart, the Senior Advisor for Economic Access at Ohio State University. Eric has sent a follow-up email. He was the person who wanted to know if his current student loan would be affected by this 10% cap or ceiling on payments, 10% of his income. How's he going to find out? How is he going to be notified of this? Does he get a form in the mail? Does he just start paying 10% of his income come July 1st? How does it technically work? Do we know?
It's going to be handled by the company taking care of his repayment.
Okay.
He certainly can inquire through his current repayment service about it, but they should be making that adjustment after the law begins to take place. Typically, students today are notified through email. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important for Eric and other prior borrowers to keep their lender, whether that's the federal government, whomever, apprised of their email address. And we really recommend that as the vehicle that they receive notices and information.
There's probably an 800 number on there somewhere, too.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Go the old-fashioned way and use the telephone. Best bet is just contact your lender because they're still, right now with different banks, there's still different lenders out there, but it'll get consolidated after July 1st. Looking more broadly at the whole issue of student debt, the average, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the average Ohio college graduate leaves school $24,000 in debt. It sounds like a lot of money, but for a four-year education, it's about the price of a new car. If you're paying 5% interest on that loan and you have 10 years to pay it off, which most people, I think, try to do it in 10 years, it's $260 a month, you know, give or take, using an interest and payment calculator I found online. Is that a lot for a student to handle, or is it to be expected for a good four-year education?
We wish that the overall debt were lower, but the value of an overall education has a great deal of value. And so student loans really reflect the way we as Americans invest in things that have big return on our lives. And the interesting thing is that the people who have trouble repaying their student loans are most frequently those who borrow least. Now, that may sound counterintuitive, but that's because those are people who dropped out of college already having some debt. So the important thing is to borrow as little as possible, but to stay in school, even if that means borrowing a little bit more, because you're much more likely to be successful both financially and on every other area that we care about as Americans by completing your degree. And that's true whether it's a one-year, two-year, or four-year program or going on to law or medicine.
That's right. We did a study at Columbus State about 2 years ago, and it was borne out in our factual data. Students were defaulting on loans as little as $200 and $300, and almost entirely it was students who unfortunately had to drop out before completing their degree or certificate. The other aspect of the amount of loans students are carrying that I think bears some mention is that student loan borrowing does not happen in a vacuum. A lot of students also are finding themselves indebted to credit card companies. They're also involved in other types of consumer debt for auto loans, home mortgages. Hopefully they aspire to that at some point. And so when you're looking at the amount of student loans and whether it's a high amount or low amount, it's really not in a vacuum. You have to look at what is the total indebtedness of that individual and what are they going to be able to manage as a total amount of payments on loans.
The strategy for the student in school now or parents of students in school now, is it better to try to lessen the student loan in the early years and then if you find that you're at your sophomore year and you're tight on money, then that's the time to increase your student loan. Is that a good strategy to avoid dropping out and then not being able to pay the loan?
That's a very good strategy, and especially if you're borrowing, if you don't qualify for interest subsidy. Unsubsidized loans, which everyone qualifies to receive, the interest begins accruing right from the time you take it out. So the later you borrow, the better in terms of what you'll be required to repay. But as we've tried to point out, and still bears repeating, the important thing is to borrow the minimum that it takes to stay in school. We see that students who try to do multiple jobs and go to school full time to avoid student loans also don't tend to be successful. So a combination of a modest amount of work, we usually define that as about 20 hours a week at most, and a small amount of student loans that keep you in school and keep you afloat financially is the best formula for success.
292-8513. If you have a question about student loans, student aid, if you have a student who is about ready to, it's a little late now, I think. We're in April. So what financial aid forms are in, right, for the most part?
A lot of them are still being filed.
Still being filed, okay.
An important message is if you haven't filed because you think that your college had an earlier deadline, file now. Go ahead and do it. See what the college has available to you. If they have money to award, you're going to be next in line compared to the people who've already filed. But it's a really important thing to go ahead and complete that FAFSA if you haven't already.
FAFSA is the financial aid form for those who haven't seen it yet. Is it still as complicated as it was?
Actually, in recent years, there has been a movement to make it a bit easier for families and students to file the form, and that direction is continuing. They're looking at even some further alterations over the next several years, and actually in the time that I've been involved in this profession, things have changed dramatically in the positive sense. It's not the easiest thing you'll ever encounter, but it's much easier than it used to be.
What, Marty from Columbus State, you mentioned the sort of, it's basically financial management. I mean, you graduate from college, you get a good job, you want to buy your house, you want that new car, you want that HDTV, but you've got your student loans, you've got your credit card debt. What are schools doing to try to help students with good sort of home-based financial management?
I think you'll find that it varies from institution to institution, but almost every school that I'm aware of is now embarking or involved with some sort of financial management programming for their students, whether that's as part of an orientation program when they first come to the institution. I know Ohio State has a very in-depth program that Tally was instrumental in developing, or as part of programming they do specifically at different times of the year, Financial Awareness Month, something of that nature. But it's very critical, I think, for an individual to look at that long-term view of what their final goal is as far as a career and not just make decisions based on the here and now, but look at it that longer term. What can I do if I'm going to begin my educational career at a community college, for example, and then transfer to a four-year institution to finish my bachelor's degree? How can I do that with the least amount of debt throughout that time period to save myself interest and ultimately save myself repayment at the end of the process?
Tally, is this program, this financial program, required of students at Ohio State, and what's the buy-in?
It isn't required, but students want to participate. Mm-hmm. We have a financial wellness center that's part of so-called RPAC. People who are here know that athletic facility on campus, and the Student Financial Wellness Center is there. And we invite freshmen as part of the Success Series, their first quarter here, to take one of more than 18 different seminars in financial management. And about 30% of our freshmen elect to do that. So we know it's very popular. The programs continue throughout the years. A lot of graduate students come in. Students who are going to marry another student want to talk about both having debt. Complex but interesting array of students find it helpful, and that's why Ohio State has made this investment in having these available, because as Marty points out, it's not just student loans. When we studied it, much like Columbus State did, we found that the students who were in student loan trouble had even higher credit card debt than their student loan debt. And so there really is a relationship there when people get into debt trouble. And the first thing they need to do is try to reduce that credit card debt burden.
Okay. 292-8513, if you'd like to join our conversation. Julie, you're on the air.
Yes. Good morning. I am calling just to make a comment, I believe, and maybe a question. But I'm just incensed by the whole conversation. I cannot believe that we're talking about putting debt on the backs of these children to get degrees, or I'm sorry, not children, but adults, and then forcing them out into the world with all this debt on their back. And where, at what point will we get to where we're not making them pay for a higher education? Are we not interested in supporting them financially so that they can get a better job and contribute to the community? And I guess my question was, on the interest that's being charged, 5 to 7%, which is, I think, completely ludicrous, is any of that money going back to the school? Do you all get a cut back from that interest?
No.
That's my question.
They're shaking their heads.
No, to answer that question specifically, no.
So it's going straight to the banks. All that money, when you talk about $24,000 at 5 to 7% over 10 years, what is that actual total amount?
Well, I mean, you can do the math on what, you know, it's like a mortgage. You know, you pay most of your, you know, you pay your interest on your mortgage.
So amortizes, it's more like what, $150,000?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have my shoes and socks are underneath the table, so I can't figure out the math. But I mean, it's a cost of a loan. So I guess it raises a good question though. Now that the government is in the loan business and banks have been cut out, where is that interest going? Will it go to fund Pell Grants or other loans and other programs?
The Pell Grant funding will come from the fact that banks no longer earn any kind of premium from the student loans. The interest rate will be tied to the amount of interest that the federal government pays on its own treasury bonds. And so the money will be returned to the federal government and not in any profit margin, but rather exactly what the federal government has to do to acquire money.
Right. And I think I'd also like to point out to the caller and any other folks that may question this, the institutions are simply the provider of the education. And it's in the institution's best interest to work with students individually to help them access the best types of assistance first before looking at student loans. And both in the legislation and in the practice of how financial aid is administered, institutions will always work with individuals to see if they can determine eligibility for grant funding or scholarship funding that do not have to be repaid as part of getting your education. And it's only at the tail end of the process where students that are forced because of no other means available to them that may need to take out student loans that it becomes a potentially valuable tool for them in making sure that they can persist and stay in school and graduate.
Let's go back to the phones. Susan, you're on the air talking about student loans.
When I was in college long ago, my tuition was about 2% of my parents' annual income. Tuition fees, expenses, about 2% of their annual income. And today, in today's world, you would need to make, if you're going to a $40,000 a year school, you'd have to make $1 million a year to have that be true. And one of the reasons that costs have gone up, I'm sorry to say this, is that we have student loans. Universities can charge this, and private schools, particularly like culinary schools and all these private trade schools, to charge these exorbitant fees and talk these young people into taking out $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 in debt in order to go. If we didn't have the loans available to the students, I think we would see the prices at universities and private schools come down overnight.
Okay, let's get a response to that. Is it a vicious circle?
I think we've all heard those same policy arguments that the more you increase the availability of funds, it gives the schools the opportunity to raise tuition and rely on the government and in the case of loans, both the government and the student in terms of repayment to charge a higher tuition rate. I think here in the state of Ohio, the university system of Ohio, all the public colleges and universities have really made a firm commitment over the last several years to try to limit the amount of tuition increases that have to be borne by students. I mentioned earlier, Columbus State has been in a very good position to be able to keep our tuition constant since 2006, and that's a fairly unprecedented period of time to maintain the exact same level of tuition for our student population.
Part of that is because the state legislature has stepped up and increased, or at least not cut, increased when the economy was better, the aid to colleges and universities. But when that goes away, as what happened last year, schools raise tuition.
It's an unfortunate part of the process. But like Marty, every research study with which I'm familiar says at standard public and even private not-for-profit institutions that increases in tuition are not driven by student loans, but rather by just demand for students to get an education. They certainly fluctuate, as we see right now, with a weaker economy in order to keep students in school. Colleges have every incentive, really, to reduce the amount of borrowing, to reduce tuition as much as possible, because we hardly end our relationship with students when they receive the degree. We're counting on their ongoing relationship with us as alumni, their support for our institutions when they're citizens. And so it really is a great deal of pressure on us to keep tuition and any related student borrowing at a minimum.
Okay. Phone lines have lit up all of a sudden. Adam, you're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
I was just actually calling to seek a little bit of advice, if at all possible. My current situation is I didn't have to take out student loans until just this past winter quarter, but I've had to take them out a lot because I'm fairly broke.
Where are you in school?
I'm at Ohio State University.
What year?
Roughly my third year. I got another year and a half to go, but I also have a child, and because I have a child, I work 40 hours a week. And, yeah, it's a lot.
So what is your question?
So I'm looking for advice. Do you think I should maybe cut down on my work hours if at all possible and try to subsidize my living expenses with more through loans or something like that?
I think, Adam, trying to achieve that balance, 40 hours a week as a parent and a full-time student. I take it you're enrolled full-time.
That's correct.
That's a lot to carry, and especially if you qualify for subsidized student loans and hopefully maybe some grant funding from Ohio State, that combination to reduce the amount that you're working would be really advantageous to you in the long run, if it's possible.
Well, I've been able to take out the full length of Pell Grant money, and was recently awarded a great deal of loan money. Mm-hmm. So I guess conceivably it's possible. It's just getting difficult, and I have a hard time. Like last quarter, I only took like 10 credit hours, and that's not really enough to get out of school within a reasonable amount of time.
So have you taken out loans already, Adam?
Just past winter quarter was the first time I did it.
What do you expect? You know, what do you anticipate leaving school? What kind of debt burden do you expect to have?
I don't know. Somewhere like 25, 28,000, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like what I was doing was I knew I would have to take out loans winter quarter because I had basically spent all my money on my tuition out of pocket. So, as a result, that left me broke. So now I had to take out student loans.
Okay. Adam, one bit of advice for you and for anyone who's listening is to be sure that you apply for next year's aid as soon as possible. You want to try to meet the deadlines for the upcoming year so that any additional grant or scholarship funds that Ohio State or whatever the listener's institution is made available to you. So you, if you haven't done your form for next year, please do it now.
Okay. Hope this helped, Adam. Thanks. Good luck to you. Take care.
Bye.
Just a couple minutes left here before we have to break for the hour. What does the future hold for this student loan program, Marty? Will we ever be without student loans? Are they always going to be with us?
I don't have a crystal ball, but they've been with us for quite some time, so I wouldn't expect them to go away anytime soon. I think it would be a great thing to continue the dialogue, make sure that at the public policy level, there is a full understanding of how can we best strike that balance between the economic benefits that a person can attain through a higher education, but the debt that they're forced to take out to get that education.
Tally, do we see more programs like early forgiveness of loans if you enter teaching or work in a poor neighborhood or a poor rural area, things like that?
I think especially states will be interested in those kind of programs because it can have a big influence on economic development. So if there is a workforce shortage, it's very common for a state to introduce some loan forgiveness programs. And so I see that not only at the federal level, but increasingly at the state level. I think that we'll see a future, if I could look into my cloudy crystal ball, that even employers may be interested in some workforce initiatives to help students repay their student loans.
They help it now with graduate school, and many employees have offered tuition help, including Ohio State does for its employees. Thanks to Marty Malowiski from Columbus State Community College and Tally Hart from OSU. Thanks for joining us on All Sides. This is WOSU 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.